So again, the Pella was established in 2003, and from this slide here you can see why we were actually prompted to establish our organization. African-American men have the lowest life expectancy of any racial and ethnic group in this country. And those of us that work in the Pella have been aware of that for a number of years. And so what we really wanted to do is to make sure that we could do something or do our part to actually change this trend moving forward, to get a better understanding of what was happening with these men, and to educate people so that we could get them to change their behaviors moving forward. So again, we have not been engaged in research, but we've really been taking a very hard look. Well, what we've actually been doing is really more than anything else, providing a service to the men that come and are screened by us. I should also point out that we don't have any consistent funding. So people think, well, you have to have a lot of money to do this. We don't have any consistent funding. All the work is done, for the most part, by volunteers. So we don't have any paid staff. Everything is done by volunteers. And we've been able to partner with a lot of other organizations and individuals to help us. Our event has been held, with exception, for the last 10 years at Malcolm X College in the city of Chicago. They have decided to embrace this event as their own, so they waive all the fees for the usage of the facility, so we don't have to pay any facility fees anymore. The Chicago chapter of National Black Nurses comes out every year. They provide support with our screening. The Chicago chapter, Chi Eta Phi chapter, well, Alpha Eta chapter, Chi Eta Phi sorority, come out, help us with our screening. We have students from Malcolm X that help us with our screening as well. And we also have a number of physicians that are members of the Pella. And they come out every year, and they provide support, not only in terms of the testing, but they actually literally come there in casual clothes, and they're there for the entire day. And they spend the day interacting with the men that come there. So they see physicians that actually look like them, many of whom actually came from neighborhoods, some of the neighborhoods that they came from, that are not dressed as physicians and don't look like physicians and don't act like physicians. And they can actually talk to them one-on-one and get more information about what's going on. Now, in terms of age, and we have a database now of about 1,300 men, some of whom have come in multiple years. As you can see, that most of the men that come in and take advantage of our services are 45 years or older. A small number of 65 and older, but we're really not penetrating men somewhere between 18 to 24. So that's something that we really want to take a look at moving forward. Can we sort of change what we're looking at? Because we have come to understand that most of the people that we're seeing are already at some point of disease, and some are at advanced state of disease. So we're not doing any early detection. So that's one thing that we know for a fact. So we really are looking at the age group of the men that we attract and who comes out to our event. This is a very busy slide. I'm not going to spend a lot of time on it, but it does allow me to talk a little bit about what we do in terms of the service we provide, because it's a little different than what you would experience if you went to a regular screening. The first station that we have is blood pressure. So every man that comes in there that actually volunteers to be screened can have their blood pressure checked. And this was by design, because we wanted to get their blood pressure checked before they did anything else, and we wanted to get them in a relaxed stage, and because subsequently what we do is we actually draw blood. So we don't do finger sticks, we actually draw blood. Once a man has his blood pressure checked, he moves to a second stage where we measure height and weight, and that's so we can calculate BMI. So we've measured height and weight on most of the men so we can calculate BMI. You'll see the BMI data. And then we do a blood pressure check. If the blood pressure is normal, we take one. If the blood pressure is abnormal, we take two. And we're really going to focus on this issue in the next several slides of body mass index and overweight and obesity. And we're also going to look at this risk for cardiovascular disease, because we have a lot of data and a lot of things we could look at. But when we looked at the data, the first thing that jumped out is some of the cardiovascular risk and obesity related to cardiovascular risk. But again, like I said, that we actually draw blood. So we don't do finger sticks. We draw one vial of blood. What we do with that one vial of blood is we do a lipid profile, we do glucose, we do bun and creatinine, and we've been doing a PSA. And we've been doing PSA testing for the last 10 years. Last year, we made a modest change in what we did. Well, not a change. And I think a lot of people know here that PSA testing and screening has become very controversial. And we debated all year long whether or not we would actually offer the test, because it's very controversial in terms of whether you should or you should not. And people are even arguing in terms of the risk-benefit ratio of PSA testing, whether you should still be doing PSA testing and screening. So we decided that we would proceed and we would test anyone that actually wanted the test. But we did something different this year we've never done before. We actually provided informed consent for PSA testing. So men would know the benefit and the risk of the test before they actually had to test. So we diverted from what we typically did. The other thing we did is we were very curious about what would happen as a result of doing the PSA testing and what men might think about this. And so we circulated a questionnaire. And so we have a survey of 100 men who came in to be screened about what they thought about PSA testing and whether or not they thought it had any reliability for predicting prostate cancer. Most of them thought it did, it didn't, which was really interesting. But we haven't analyzed the results of that yet. So we are a very data-rich organization. So let me go on from here. This is what we decided to focus on, is some of the cardiovascular trends related to what we've been looking at for the last 10 years. And when you look at this in terms of trends, you see peaks and valleys, but it doesn't really give you an idea of what we found. But what it does say, consistently, the men that have participated in our screening have a high level of obesity, high rate of obesity. It's been up and down, but consistently has been over the national average. And the same thing can be said for hypertension. It started out low, but what you can see is typically somewhat higher than the national average. And again, when we looked at cholesterol, you can see that it's all over the place. This is the total cholesterol and the LDL. And let me go back and again. You could see that our N was 1,563 people. So we have a very robust database that we've been saying is just dying for somebody to take a look at and help us figure out what we're actually experiencing. So I'm not here to actually present this to say these are our results. I'm actually here to present this to say that we're interested in people who are working with us to get a better understanding of the people we provide a service to. And we have over 1,300 people that actually have some level of screening data. And some of these men have come over multiple years. We started in 2003. One of the things we've done every year is we give out T-shirts. So some people come not only for the screening, but they come to get their annual T-shirt. And we have people that wear T-shirts from 2003 get their T-shirt for 2012. So a couple of conclusions, and this is relative to the data that I just showed you, and like I said, the number of overweight and obese are nearly 20% higher than the statewide estimates. So that's something we know for a fact, and I think some of the other speakers have already talked about this issue of obesity in African-American men. So what we're seeing is no different than what other people see when they do screening or they look at the data, that there is a high prevalence of overweight and obesity in African-American men. The other thing that was somewhat alarming is when we looked at blood pressure. And of the men that were screened, when we looked at high blood pressure, a significant number had both a high systolic and or dystolic. Sometimes it's not high and, but it's high and systolic or dystolic blood pressure. 41% is nearly 30% over the 29.9% statewide average. So we're seeing that people that are high risk for some cardiovascular event moving forward, and that's not surprising. And picking up on something the last speaker said, when you look at SES in African-American men, it doesn't tell you an awful lot And actually, and I'll do a plug for it later on when we're finished. I'm doing another talk this afternoon with Dr. Kittles and Dr. Terry Mason. And one of the things we're going to be talking about culture is SES doesn't measure the impact of culture. And so even when people move from one socioeconomic strata to another, their behavior doesn't change very much because their culture is ingrained and people tend to eat the same things they ate when they didn't have money and engage in the same behaviors that they did before they had money. So sometimes when you look at things on the basis of SES, you can't tease out the differences because there's some other things that are going on that may not help you actually see what those differences are. And this is my last slide. What we've come to understand is that we started this because we wanted to change that gap that I showed you early on. We wanted to reduce premature death among African American men, get them to live a longer, fuller, more healthy, more robust life. And basically all we're doing is providing a service. So the question is, what can we do moving forward that's different than what we've done in the past? We've done this for 10 years. We've established a brand in the city of Chicago. So when we do an event, people know us. They know us by name. We've never charged for any event that we've ever offered. In addition to providing the screening, we provide fresh fruit for everybody that comes in the morning. So we provide fresh fruit for everybody. We partnered with Congressman Davis last year. He actually provided lunch for everybody that came and stayed. So everything we do is free, so there's never been a cost for anything we do. So we think we have a real good brand that we could use and we could leverage to do significantly more work moving forward. So what we're hoping to do is to really look at some interventions that we could develop and to begin pilot looking at the data that we already have so that we can see if, in fact, we can actually make a change where other people have not made a change. And then the other thing we're looking at is to look at some existing infrastructures that we've actually begun to work with to see if we can't partner with them to do some things. The best example I can give right now is the Prince Hall Masonic Lodge. It's a statewide organization. They have 2,500 members statewide. For the last 2 years, and on Saturday, we're doing our third annual diabetes screen. November's Diabetes Awareness Month. And we started doing the screening to build a relationship with them. And earlier this year, they actually invited us to one of their regional meetings. They had a regional meeting in right outside of Chicago. They invited myself and Dr. Kittles to actually present to them. And we presented the concept of doing research with them as a group, which they have embraced, and they are allowing us to come back and do a screening. We have 2 years worth of baseline information. After this year, we'll have 3 years worth of baseline data with them. And now we're just talking to them about what we could do to actually structure some kind of intervention moving forward with them statewide relative to some of the health outcomes that we're looking at based upon what we've done. And with that, maybe I'll get some assistance from the technician, and I could, that's how to get in touch with us, but if you got the handouts, you'll be able to do that.